Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you.
Good morning. It's me, Jesse, filling in for Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF 90.1 FM from Burnaby, British Columbia, streaming worldwide at cjsf.ca. and broadcasting from the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, Stolo, Kwikwetlem, Catesy, and other Coast Salish peoples. Today on Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon, you'll hear two interviews with wonderful, creative people who use their talent and communication skills to share important stories with their audiences. Later on in the show, we'll hear my interview with Rumtin Bashi, lead volunteer at World Media in English, a media platform that brings translated news from around the world to English-speaking audiences. But first, we'll hear from Jim Smith, executive and artistic director of Dance House, about the Canadian premiere of Broken Cord by renowned South African choreographer and performer Gregory Makoma and musical director Thuthuka Sibisi, February 23rd to 25th at the Vancouver Playhouse. In Broken Cord, four vocal soloists, the Vancouver Chamber Choir, and Makoma himself share the stage in a musical and movement-filled exploration of the life and legacy of the African Native Choir, a South African ensemble that toured the globe in the late 1800s. Their history is brought to vibrant life through rhythmic, high-energy contemporary dance intertwined with song, sound, and storytelling. Before we get into my conversation with Jim, here is a piece of music by Thuthuka Sibisi from the African Choir 1891 Revisited. This is Kuyus.
Azumba, 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 azumba,
azumba, azumba, azumba, contristatem
conentem azumba 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 azumba
da va da va di va da 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 do do do
ha
Azumba, 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 Azum
lava.
Azumba, 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 Azumba.
I'm joined now by Jim Smith, the executive and artistic director of Dance House, who are co-presenting the Canadian premiere of Broken Cord, February 23rd to 25th at the Vancouver Playhouse. Jim, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's really great to have you to talk about this very interesting dance performance. What can you tell me on like a really broad sort of introductory level about Broken Cord?
Well, certainly without giving away all of the good stuff, because, you know, we want to save some of the magic for those that show up and see it in the theater. But Broken Cord is a fascinating work, I think, and being presented in the context of Dance House. But the first thing I always feel like I need to say about Broken Cord is it is as much a musical offering as it is a dance offering. And talking a little bit about the piece, it really is inspired by a historic choir that back in the late 1800s was on a tour, which would have included the US, Canada, and the UK. So oddly enough, the production Broken Cord is echoing that touring schedule, as a matter of fact. And the choir was out doing some fundraising. The choir was a choir of Black performers that were associated with a mission, and we're off to see the world. Gregory Macoma ended up encountering at an exhibition fragments from the original choir in terms of some photographs, some recordings that lingered, some texts that were in place, and became so inspired with this material that, you know, according to him, he ended up dancing in the space that he actually saw it. It was such a point of curiosity and such a point of inspiration. So cycle forward about 100 years, and he and his composer colleague have taken this material and repurposed and reshaped it into a work that features five performers that are traveling from South Africa. So four singers and Gregory Macoma, who primarily does the dance element, although all the four singers are also great movers as well. But integrated into the production is actually a local choir. And here in Vancouver, we have the great joy of it being the Vancouver Chamber Choir, who will be joining these touring performers from South Africa. And what happens is a piece that is really a bit of a dialogue between the local choir, which ends up primarily being white, as it turns out, and the performers from South Africa, who, as it turns out, are all Black. And there's a bit of a dialogue that takes place. And the work from from the perspective of an audience member is, witnessing this dialogue. And I won't say a lot about that dialogue. That's part of the magic of the show. Sure. But it really allows for some examination of notions of, in our current context of colonialism, of immigration, of notions of barriers and access versus limited access. And so it takes this, historical story and gives it a new context in which to be examined and to, confront some of the issues that are current and alive in our modern society.
That's a really interesting way to take, that past material and sort of the experience of the African Native Choir being on tour out throughout Europe, North America, and then sort of represent it in this current context, as you're saying, with that dialogue of it being there, these Black performers and the white chorus, and then it just seems like a very interesting way to reframe and sort of add layers of depth and meaning to the whole thing.
I agree. And I think that one of the things, again, that I've heard Gregory McCormack say about the piece is that, it really is trying to facilitate recognizing we've all lived different experiences. But is there a way to build empathy or build a broader context to get into, somebody else's head or try to appreciate those experiences? And, we can never relive them ourselves, but maybe we have some new insights and some new understandings about the people around us as a result of this encounter.
Yeah, I think that's one of the ways that people are really looking to sort of connect and engage with issues of race and inequality and colonialism is for there to be a way that it's not just presenting here is what the situation is, here's what the situation has been, but is more of a way to actually have a conversation about it or experience a conversation about it, where there is both the perspective, there are multiple perspectives presented. And so the audience can find themselves in there somewhere.
I agree very much so. Again, the historic perspective and a current perspective, a race perspective, I feel like all of those things are at play, which is why it's, a relatively rich and complex offering.
Mm-hmm. How did you come to know about Broken Cord? Like how did it come into your sphere?
So, I'm lucky and privileged that part of my day job is actually having a bit of a pulse on what the international dance scene looks like. And, and I'll confess that I feel that Africa as a continent, and there are many Africans inside of that. So I'm, I don't sound like I'm generalizing other than the fact that I'm generalizing to talk about, my journey of better understanding the dance world of Africa has been going on for, some 6 years or so. And certainly Gregory McCormack is somebody that has popped up on a number of occasions in terms of different encounters that I've had, trying to understand the scene, but other colleagues who, do similar type work that I do speak very highly of Gregory McCormack. I've been lucky enough to have a couple of conversations with him over the phone. He was on a Canadian conference that took place a couple of years ago with Capicoa. He was actually a featured speaker, as a matter of fact. And I have to say he's quite an inspired individual and very inspiring as a result of that. And Dance House actually presented a work by him in the previous season. It was a digital work that was actually a commission on a different company. So all that's to say, in trying to understand or, map, who's part of the dance scene that is in Africa, certainly in the context of South Africa, Gregory McCormack pops up as somebody who is very much a mover and a shaker and has a lot to say about how to change the world in a positive way. And then just doing further research of, what works he has out there. There was actually another production that we were considering, which I won't talk a lot about because it's the one that's not coming to town, but all that's to say, Broken Cord ended up striking a chord, pun intended, with a number of North American presenters. So this work will also be seen in Ottawa at Canada's National Arts Centre and also in Toronto. So three Canadian presenters all pulled together and aligned the stars, as it were, to build a tour so the work could be in Canada.
Can you sort of put into words what it was that that made Broken Cord the decision as opposed to the other production you were considering?
I'd say it had to do with this dialogue, like this conversation. It very much feels, even though it's got this historical perspective, it is a piece that is so relevant and has a lot of resonance in the now, I would say. I think was also a lot of curiosity about this notion of how you can engage a local community of artists into a production. I think that also captured everyone's imaginations in terms of the presenters that are involved. And so, you know, those two items, I think, were, sort of standouts in terms of tipping the balance towards this particular production. I'll also say that Gregor Mokoma, you know, it was his preference to try and get this work out in the world, particularly in the context of North America, I would say.
Mm-hmm. That sort of segues into the next thing I wanted to ask, which is why do you think that it's important that, like, Vancouver or maybe more broadly Canadian audiences see this work?
So I'm gonna back up and sort of, you know, philosophically, you know, I my role inside of Dance House is to program work that is at an international level, and the importance of that is, we have a very rich dance ecology in Vancouver, in BC, in Canada, and we see a lot of work that's made at a local level or a provincial level and a national level, and these are all, you know, great manifestations of what the Canadian experience looks like on stage when it's put forward by an artist or interpreted by an artist. But I always feel like travel, the opportunity to go somewhere where you're not from or where you don't necessarily identify as being part of the scene, so being a Canadian, it gives you a chance to, you know, rub up against that experience that is different. And in many ways, it brings you greater insight into that which you are, or that's the way I find travel always inspires me. And I think bringing international programming, so work by artists that are from a different cultural environment, is an opportunity to better appreciate the Canadian work that we all have access to, because we get to see how it is unique in its own way or how it is different from these other offerings. So that's a, you know, maybe a bit too philosophical and a bit of a word salad, but I feel like it hits your question sort of on the head in terms of, you know, why is it important to see work that's from another location? I feel it gives us some new insights into who we are or where we are.
Yeah, it's always, it can act as that mirror, right? Where, or maybe a mirror is the wrong metaphor, but it lets you see something of yourself that you might not have otherwise, or notice things that you might not otherwise.
I agree. I feel like it's a mirror we potentially look into where we see different, as opposed to where we see a reflection of ourselves back.
Great. Well, Jim, I'm very excited to see Broken Cord, February 23rd to 25th. Is there anything else you think our audiences should know about the performance?
I don't say this about all presentations, but certainly this is one of those presentations where it's, I think it's a difficult message to talk about what this experience is going to be, but I guarantee if you show up, if you end up inside of the theater, you will walk away satisfied. Either it's with a number of new curiosities or new questions, or just the performances themselves will bring you something that is, you know, completely worth your time.
Great. Well, thanks for joining me, Jim.
My great pleasure.
That was my conversation with Jim Smith, Executive and Artistic Director of Dance House, about the upcoming performance Broken Cord, which plays February 23rd to 25th at the Vancouver Playhouse. You can grab tickets at tickets.dancehouse.ca. That's tickets.dancehouse.ca. To wrap up the first half of today's episode of Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon on CJSF 90.1 FM, here's another piece of music from Broken Cord's musical director, Thuthuka Sibisi. This is Olo Tikso Mukulu Sik. Welcome back to Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, also streaming worldwide at cjsf.ca. I'm Jesse Wensloff, filling in for Charlotte this week. You just heard Ulo Tikso Mukulu, Zik, by Tutuka Sibisi, musical director for Broken Cord, which you can see February 23rd to 25th at the Vancouver Playhouse. Get your tickets at tickets.dancehouse.ca. For the second half of the show, I'm excited to present my conversation with Ramtin Bashi, a student, journalist, activist, and lead volunteer for World Media in English, a people's project to bring media in world languages to the global community in English translations and interpretations. You can see the project at worldmediainenglish.org. Welcome, Ramtin. How are you?
I'm fine, Jesse. Thank you. Thank you for having me today.
Oh, very glad to have you on the program to talk a little bit about World Media in English. To start with, what is WME and what's its purpose?
All right. Well, I think we can say it's a platform. Even though a platform sounds like a big word, people think about Facebook or YouTube or Wikipedia, where millions of people upload content every day and millions of others see that content and use it or react to it. But if you look at it functionally in terms of what it can do and is ready to do, it's a platform. And its purpose is to enable contributors to create and upload English translations of media coverages about issues of human rights and social justice pertaining to any communities of the world. Now, if you ask how this can be done, basically, if someone is brought up or cultured as a native of a community and they see that there are issues of human rights or economic or environmental justice going on in their community, that the native media there are talking about, and that the outside world can learn from or engage with more, they can make a selection of those coverages and translate them and have us publish their work so it can be available to wider audiences globally. Doing this, at the very least, publicizes issues that haven't been publicized enough internationally. But also, with a bit more work, contributors can add more value to their journalism by providing analysis of the social and political context surrounding the facts and circumstances. Doing so will highlight the social and political dependencies and connections, both within their native community and with the outside world, and can potentially show solutions going forward. Now, people would ask, what are the qualifications of your contributors, and how do we trust their content? We know graduate-level and faculty-level people in universities make these kinds of content, and they already have their audiences, who sadly aren't as big as they should be either. Here, our goal is to make the content more accessible and engaging to wider ranges of audiences. And a good way to do this is for audiences to see content made by people like themselves. Of course, we don't bar people with education and expertise in the related fields, and they are welcome to help too. As far as questions of credibility and quality of content are concerned, we are lucky in that basic principles of good journalism, especially those that apply to our kind of journalism here, which is based on quoting from other media, are easy to keep track of. Mainly that you have to gather all the facts and not just those that suit your preferences and not pass opinion or speculation as facts, and that regarding context, you must be inclusive and unbiased. And so instead of academic qualifications, we opt to rely on a set of guidelines that define the standards for content. The rest of what's needed is proficiency in languages and having kept up with your basic, with your public affairs, I mean, and freedom of expression and an internet connection, which not everybody, but many people in the world do have. As for the guidelines, they should be defined through a proper academic process. We haven't done that yet. What we have right now is a basic version, which we call a working set, which for a start we think already does contain most of the elements that are needed. As lead volunteer, I am myself studying in a Master of Social Sciences program right now, and I'm working on going to UBC for a Master of Journalism too. Both these programs include a thesis, and I'm hoping to be able to make these guidelines subject of my thesis in one or both of these programs. At the same time, we'll be happy to hear from graduate students or faculty who would like to help with the guidelines. So now you have a question.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting, the idea of sort of involving community in journalism in this way. And I think people are broadly like much more open to the idea of citizen journalism and the idea of hearing news from less of like an established source or sort of like a legacy newspaper or whatever. They, because of social media and other advances in technology, people are eager to hear sort of like grassroots reporting like that. And it's interesting though to hear that you're still like you are trying to filter it through this lens of journalism and of academic rigor, so that it's not just what someone posted on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, but there's sort of this level of screening, I guess.
Right, exactly. I think you described it very well, better than I could.
You mentioned that you're the lead volunteer. More specifically, what is your specific role or involvement with World Media in English?
Right. Well, before talking about my role, let me just say that the important things are what content we are producing, what our goals are, and what we are doing moving ahead towards our goals. And these are all driven by the guidelines. And so the outcomes of our activities will be the same regardless of which or how many volunteers there are. Just like Facebook will do the same thing for you even if you change all of their employees. The only difference here is that Facebook is a for-profit company, while our project is a volunteer-based civic campaign for public education and advocacy. And at that, a project that's properly grounded and conducted. And that's why SFPERG, Simon Fraser Public Interest Research Group Foundation, which is next door to you here, recognizes us as such and supports us with their resources. Now, as for my role, right now I'm the full-time organizer and administrator. I take care of the website and the social media accounts, and I've been creating promotion and outreach material and doing networking too. I'm also hoping to organize regular virtual meetings on Zoom soon for more organizing and content making. I've also been a journalist. I've done a news article about air pollution in a particular region in my native Iran. This article is on the news page of the website. I've also expanded our reporting about living environments and economy in this country in general into an awareness campaign with a Facebook page, which is also linked on the campaigns page of the website. I should say about this campaign, I mean our awareness campaign about the situation of environments in Iran, which is about air, water, and generally economy and public health in this country. Even though we are talking about one particular country with 1% of the world population, for a combination of reasons, it's actually very important for people everywhere to care about it. From a strictly technical point of view, the severity of the problems demand research and can potentially be useful in other similar situations in the world. Socially and economically, for the people inside the country, problems of air pollution and water bankruptcy have long passed stages of warnings and dire predictions for the future. They have already pushed thousands and thousands of people into health problems and unemployment and displacement and poverty for years. And not because these consequences have been hard to avoid, but because of ineptitude and corruption in the government. And I should say that right now I'm speaking as a journalist, not as an organizer, because an organizer's role is only to facilitate and to make sure that content is being made according to the guidelines, not to express views or judgments like I'm doing now. So going back to why international attention to situation of environments and economy in Iran is important, it's true that there is mismanagement and corruption in many governments of the world, and we would like to work on any similar issues anywhere. But here, this government literally spends the natural resources that belong to the people to control and oppress them, and instead of being accountable to them, clings it to its survival with theft and geopolitical dealings and militarism outside. While at the same time, the people have been sacrificing their lives to get rid of the regime. Added to the fact that with more awareness and support from people outside, the people inside do have a good chance of winning. So probably, unlike many similar situations in the world, here we have millions of people facing urgent problems of economic and physical insecurity, both inside and outside the country, because of a particular despotic regime, while it is possible for international citizens to stop the situation and build democracy instead, with perfectly peaceful activities of informing themselves and taking civic actions from where they live. This may sound naive, or too optimistic at least, but it has actually been happening and giving results for a few months now.
Yeah, I mean, it's been easy to see recently in various news media platforms what's going on in Iran right now, the protests against the government, at least on a surface level, I guess. But it's very helpful to have, you know, like you're saying, the sort of grassroots stories that are coming from people who are there and are not having to have the message filtered through various, you know, state voices or state-influenced voices.
Right.
I was going to ask you about your citizen journalism project, Corruption and Murder of a Regime and the People's Uprising, because it's all connected, right?
Exactly. That just goes back to what you were saying about grassroots and kind of bigger picture stories about what's going on there, and more like with background, you know, and not just headlines, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to answer your question, as I'm sure you heard, you just said it, there have been uprisings and strikes going on in Iran for almost 4 months, aimed at toppling the regime this time, the regime that has controlled this country for 43 years and really held the majority of the people there hostage. There have been protest movements before in this country, and they have all been brutally suppressed, as is this one. But this time, the people's determination seems to surpass the forces of killings and torturing. Regardless of the outcomes of these uprisings in the near future, for a number of reasons, it's also very important that the story, or in fact the stories of what's happening there, reach the most numbers of people globally. The first reason is that there is an urgent humanitarian situation going on there right now, about which international citizens can take actions that can bring significant changes relatively quickly. This is a regime which, by accounts of most observers, is a dictatorship, which caters to, or at best is acceptable to, not more than 20% of the population. In other words, at best, only 20% of the 85 million people of this country are even willing to live with this regime. And the regime just arbitrarily arrests and imprisons and injures and tortures anyone who shows any kind of behavior they don't like. Right now, they have an estimated 19,000 people in jails who they have arrested in the past 4 months, in addition to many others they have arrested or disappeared before. And they have already killed more than 500 on the streets, hanged 4 in jails, and are sentencing more to execution every week. Their behavior isn't really different from those of any horrible terrorist groups, of which we have known many in the world, but with a big difference. They need to look like a civilized and legitimate government of a modern country that is worthy of interacting and dealing with the world. That's why they need to constantly make up stories and lies. If the truth is exposed to people outside, the least we can expect is that they will hold back their violence, and also that in the long run, they will have to change or go. The other important reason to learn and act about this country is its weight and connections geopolitically and socially and culturally with the world outside. And here, of course, we are not talking about the regime, but the country and its people as a whole. You could simply say that more peace and democracy in this country can only mean more peace and democracy in many other countries of the world. I'm happy to say that, especially with this last round of the people's uprisings, a lot of this truth exposing has been happening. And that's why the regime hasn't used their troops for shoot to kill, for example, on the streets, like they were doing 3 years ago when they killed, by some estimates, 1,500 people. Also, as a result of the same truth exposing, a lot has happened at the level of governments, like the UN has thrown them out of their Commission on the Status of Women, and they have appointed a fact-finding mission to independently report on their behavior with the people. Also, some Western countries are looking at or are actually putting the regime's Revolutionary Guard Corps on their list of terrorist organizations. This is basically the regime's parallel army, parallel to the country's original army that they have created, that propagates militarism and violence and plunders and abuses the country's economy. These international actions had been demanded from these Western governments since years back. What changed now is millions of people signing petitions and writing letters and talking on social media. And this is the power of information and action from international citizens, which I was talking about. But as far as what the international public have heard or seen on media, although they've seen much more than before, it's still been mostly just headlines, which have reached mostly a minority of people in the Western world who look at international news. And this time around, you could also say also people who follow the particular Western celebrities who have endorsed the uprisings on their social media. We want to make a documentary about the situation, and in terms of content, what we want to do, as we must try in any other reporting, is a bigger picture and facts on all sides so people can make their own judgments. And in terms of audiences, rather than just people who see international news on traditional media, with social media we can and do reach almost all demographics in most countries of the world, except in the minority of those countries where access is restricted. And I should say that the title you mentioned, Corruption and Murder of a Regime and the People's Uprising, belongs to another documentary which I made for my personal YouTube channel. And the documentary I'm working on for World Media in English won't be the same. For title, in fact, I think it would be better not to imply a final judgment about what this regime is, and it would be better to leave that judgment with the audiences. The reason that that video was mentioned on our posters is that it contains some of the bigger picture facts which haven't been covered in international media much, hoping that by seeing it, people would find more good reasons why a similar documentary should be made and seen. For people who haven't seen our poster, we recommend watching this video on YouTube. If in YouTube you search the title Corruption and Murder of a Regime and the People's Uprising, it usually comes up on top of your screen.
And so obviously watching that documentary or reading articles on World Media in English are good ways that people can get involved. How else can listeners support or
sure.
get involved?
Well, here I want to talk generally, not just about, you know, content about Iran, because as I said, our platform is not just about Iran. It's mm-hmm. a global kind of a platform, and any content from any issues of human rights and democracy are important, and we are, you know, happy to hear about it. So here, when you ask how can listeners help, I want to talk generally, not just about content about this particular country, although this is, of course, very important right now as well. And people can support and help in two ways. One is joining our audiences, and two is helping with organizing and making content itself. To join our audiences, people can follow or subscribe to our social media, YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram, and these are all linked on our website. And please be sure to put your notifications on. Regarding content, to help with organizing and content, as people would know by now, what we are doing is very multidisciplinary. At the base of it is journalism, and the form of journalism that relies on languages and social and political sciences. Although, as we said earlier, for researching and creating content, people don't necessarily need to be in these fields. Having qualified people in these fields is, of course, always helpful, and once we have decided on a particular project, if we need more qualified people, we can try to find them. Next, multimedia design and production are very important, because in the age of internet, people don't want to read anything anymore. Our raw content, so to speak, is usually a collection of photos and video clips and written text that needs to be narrated or put on the screen. We can use help from people in multimedia to put these pieces together in high-quality videos to go on our YouTube channel. After a video is posted on YouTube, we will advertise it on our Instagram and Facebook and set up a live event on the three platforms simultaneously where we can talk with our audiences in real time about the posted content. And later, we will try to make the live content, the live events regular, regardless of whether we have new posts or not. People in IT could help with technical aspects of these events as well as with developing the website. And generally, people in communication or social media development could help with improving and maximizing our reach and interaction with audiences globally. And last but not least is sharing and networking. The potential size of our audiences is the billions of people in the world who visit the social media every day and see content in English. our advertisings have generally brought 10 times more reactions compared to the average. But not only we don't have the money to advertise to so many people, advertising by itself doesn't work as good as organic sharing. In any case, you don't have to promise us anything or commit any particular amount of your time. You can just come to our virtual meetings from the comfort of your house and talk with us a little bit more to see if there is something you'd like to do. Also, some of our projects may qualify for credit or as assignment as part of people's coursework, and we can discuss that in our meetings as well. To send you a Zoom invitation, we just need your email address. You can send us a blank email with mailing list in the subject line, and needless to say, we treat your email address and all other personal information confidentially. Our email address is a long one, but this is all on our website homepage under contact. So if you go to our website homepage and then there is a button that says contact, and our website is easy to remember. It's World Media in English, all in one word, .org. Again, World Media in English, all in one word, .org.
I can definitely relate to the idea of, you know, you need all sorts of people from any background, and anyone who has any interest in the work you're doing, like, that is the most important qualification.
Exactly.
is an interest to be involved, because every organization is now a tech organization, right? You need a website, you need people who can work in media. I went to school here at SFU for archaeology and ended up here at the radio station because if you have the interest and you want to start writing or contributing or helping out in some way, that's the key, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about our project is that it's pretty limitless. I mean, people can even propose their own content if they can come to our meetings, and if they see there's nothing that we can give them at the point, they can actually go find content, because there's a lot of human rights and democracy issues in the world everywhere, you know. And so, I mean, there is a lot of content, and we would welcome people to just come and propose content, and that creates work for them as well, you know. And this idea of, you know, talking to faculty and talking to students themselves to make this part of their course credit, you know, and if that happens, that's also great, because it won't be like extra time that people are spending because it's part of their school time, right?
Sure. But I mean, and even if you don't get school credit for it, it's still experience, right?
Absolutely.
It's still
absolutely
an opportunity to produce some journalism.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And also, if people, like people who don't have any of these skills, because after all, these are, you know, specialized skills, a lot of them, they can just network and share, you know, find in your family, friends, find people that want to do it, or just share on your social media, talk about the whole thing, you know, with the people that you know. That's also very important, because, you know, we can produce content, but if it's not seen by many people, you know, it won't do anything. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Spreading the word is key.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, anything else you'd like to cover about World Media in English?
Sure, thank you. Well, we've talked about a project that's new and multidisciplinary and fairly broad in its potentials and goals. And we've talked about different aspects of it. So I'd just like to summarize for our listeners to say that we are developing a web-based platform for a certain kind of citizen journalism that is based on translating to English media that originally has been published in world languages for sharing and discussion of important issues of human rights and justice and democracy. Considering that the world is a global village now, benefits and even necessity of doing this would be obvious to people. But for this project and its good results to grow, more than a small number of people doing a lot, it helps to have a large number of people doing not necessarily a lot, but even a little. And we are lucky that with internet and social media, this is quite possible now, considering that worldwide there are, by low estimates, 1.5 billion people on the internet who speak English. And among these people, there are at least millions who are able to research and create content for this purpose. One way for people to help is following our content on social media and taking part in the discussions. Another way is helping with making content or outreach. And this is actually easier for our projects compared to what may be needed for many other kinds of nonprofit work. We are not asking for money, and people just need to come on Zoom with their audio only if they don't like to share their video at a convenient time in the week. And in these meetings, we'll discuss with them individually the possible projects they may want to help with. These projects can be big or small. They can be in people's field of study or work or anything else they want to do. Or they can be about outreach, sharing, and networking. Thank you, Jesse.
Great. Well, thanks, Ramtin. And the website, again, is worldmediainenglish.org.
Exactly.
All one word. And, yeah, people can either read some stories or find out how to get involved there.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Jesse, for this.
Oh, very happy to have you here.
Thank you.
You just heard my conversation with Ramtin Bashi, lead volunteer for World Media in English. Visit worldmediainenglish.org to see the work of Ramtin and others. Thanks for spending this hour with me, Jesse, filling in for Sista C for this episode of Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Charlotte will be back soon, but in the meantime, just remember that whenever people ask her what time it is, it's always love time, poem time.
Love time, poem time, love time, poem time, love time, poem time, time for words from heaven to shine, love time, poem time, time for words to pattern and rhyme, love time, poem time, time for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time, time for poems, poets and singers, time to untie all life's ringers, poem time, love time, time for you to reveal to me, unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace. Rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words. Place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time. Poem time, love time. Love time, poem time, times for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time, time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time, times for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time, poem time, love time, time for poems, poets, singers, time to untie all life's ringers. Time for you to reveal to me, unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace, rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words, place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time, poem time, love time, love time, poem time.